Session number 19932, Reel 4.
John Bennett, Reel 4.
The rules of war, yes. I guess the other thing I remember is one of our patrols clashing with one of our other patrols. It's, we used to put a lot of patrols out of a night time. I think each company had at least, apart from listening patrols, a couple of fighting patrols out all night. And the section that I had been taken over by, I went up to a warrant officer, company headquarters, and this particular sergeant took the patrol out and ran into another one of our Australian patrols, and patrol clashed, friendly fire, which he didn't call it that in those days, but that was very tragic because he'd been a Second World War paratrooper, quite a distinguished soldier. He had a good military record, and you couldn't believe that he would somehow run into another patrol. Whether it was his fault or not, I don't know. And I don't ever remember an inquiry being carried out, although there must have been one. But his last words, when the patrol came in, I met them, and because they were my former platoon. When he was dying, he was saying to them, "Whatever you do, make sure my mother didn't know that I died like this, you know, that as not an accident so much as a result of an accident." And, so that was one of the really sad memories that I had of people. I mean, he was one of the privates in, when I was a sergeant, and he was one of the people I went up the hill with me. And yet his experience would have been megabucks more than mine at the time. But
and so, how long after the big battle of January 1952 were you in Korea for?
I stayed there until end of October, and then went back to RHU in Japan.
Any other incidents that happened to you in those 9 months?
No, there's frequent patrolling, plenty of shelling by the Chinese. Well, as you'd say, day-to-day in the life of an infantryman, it was expected, you know, if you stick your head up too much above the parapet, you'd expect, you know, the shots would come ranging. And we went back to 227. We had an outpost at the bottom of 227. And I remember being in that several times, and, you know, you put your head up on a stick or a rifle, and sure enough, the Chinese had let fly at it every time. And eventually, I think they built a crawl trench to it, so as to risk to avoid the fire from the hill. But other than that, it settled down to pretty, as I say, pretty much routine. The patrols, you knew you'd have to go out twice in the week. It was always at night. We didn't do any daytime patrols.
And was your attitude towards the war different after the battle from what it had been before?
Yes, it changed because at that time the peace talks were on, and the peace talks had dragged on, as you know, for quite some time. And I started to see the uselessness of sort of going out on patrol, and we're madly trying to capture a prisoner at that time to get information. And sure, you needed to patrol to stop the enemy getting close to the wire, but to go forward into the enemy's trenches and do a prisoner snatch, never thought that was very wise. I think there was a lack of necessity to do it. The commander might like to get a prisoner, and he promised a bottle of whiskey and a week's leave for the first person who they caught a prisoner, which some British end up doing anyway. But it seemed to me a fairly worthless sort of a task that the peace talks had gone on, and it was clear that once the peace talk came on, both sides were going to move back. You couldn't capture any more ground unless you had massive casualties. By that time, the Chinese had reinforced their lines fairly considerably, where once the attack on 227 had gone on, perhaps their lines weren't as strongly fortified as they were later. Mm.
Did the political aspect of the war mean anything to you?
No, not really. It was outside, you know. Our life was dictated by the CO, what the CO wanted. If the CO woke up with a headache, well, we all had a headache all day, but the CO very much controlled the battalion. Mm.
What did you think to the enemy?
I had a healthy respect for him, and he wasn't. It always struck me as though he wasn't as well trained as we were. This might be a typical Australian braggart comment, which we're renowned for our braggartness. We always had guys who used their initiative. I'm not so sure the Chinese always used their initiative, and clearly they were very brave soldiers. And clearly they would press home and attack, that was for sure.
Can you, whilst you were in Korea, did you maintain contact with home much?
Yes, my father would write every week. And I think I would write to him as well. It's a tragedy as I've never kept any of his letters, and he wouldn't kept any of mine. I think my father realises, having been a soldier himself, the importance of this sort of link with the family. And it was every Tuesday, I'm pretty sure, whatever day it was, that we'd get the mail from him. And, you know, he was a very regular correspondent. Of course, in those days, there were no girlfriends there unless you... I didn't have a girlfriend, or I was purely dedicated to the army by that stage. Married to the army, which was soon dissolved.
How did you... Can you tell me how you came to leave Korea, please?
When we left... Well, your rotation, you come up for 12 months, you have to come out anyway, unless you want to reassign. And at that stage, I thought I might like to do another tour, but this time in 2 Battalion, which was my original battalion, who were then in Korea. Glad I didn't, as it turned out, because I ended up on the hook with one of the fiercest battles towards the end of the war. So I left Korea and I went to the reinforcement holding unit again. I was the CSM there, company sergeant major, for a period of probably 3 or 4 months before I went back to Australia. But I didn't want to stay in Japan at that time.
Why not?
Well, when I look back, and I'm sure I was suffering from some sort of stress from the war, towards the end, if you'd hear a noise like that, you'd immediately dive to the bottom of the trench, because that would be a mortar coming in. You could always hear the mortars firing at before the mortar arrived, and my nerves were on edge a bit.
The noise you made then was that you ran your fingers down that curtain.
Yes.
Is that what a mortar sounded like?
Pardon?
Is that what a mortar sounded like?
You'd hear the pop, but at the same time any scratchy noise would put you on edge. And I think that's a sign that it should be out for a while and get the batteries recharged and go in again. Particularly when we were getting shelled and mortared. I think you hated the mortars more because they could reach behind the hill, whereas the shells would hit the front of the hill and you'd be very unlucky if that would do much damage. Unless you're in a forward trench, of course.
So you said that you felt that you were maybe stressed after you came back?
I'm sure I was.